and we were standing right there at the entrance. And I just remember saying to myself, like, I could either be jealous and get angry, or I could just understand that, like, we can't afford it. And me getting jealous and angry isn't going to change the fact that we can't afford it. But we got this bag of snacks, got Mama Joyce and my crazy cousins behind me, and we're going to go down to the park. And I'm still going to have fun, whether I got Chuck Taylors on or not.
Hello there. I'm Yonka Kamara. Welcome to Kume Turning Point Diaries, where we share stories of critical moments in our personal and professional lives.
On this week's episode, we are talking about loving your life and not chasing someone else's with our special guest, Leah Washington. Leah is a young professional residing in Washington, D.C. with a moving life story. In our conversation, Leah walks us through her childhood in foster care and how that particular part of her life taught her the importance of gratitude and being content. This knowledge has aided her in becoming the positive and resilient person she is today, and I'm so excited to share this beautiful and inspiring conversation with you. So let's dive in. Hello, Leah. Welcome to Kume Turning Point Diaries. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, do you prefer to go by Kalia or Leah? I know Kalia is your full name, but which one do you prefer to go by on this show?
I prefer to go by Leah on the show. You have to be very, very special to call me Kalia, which you are special to me. But for the purposes of the show, let's stick with Leah.
Okay. So I'll call you Leah. So Leah and I went to Occidental College in Los Angeles together. You were, I believe, 2 years, right, below me, because you were class of 2014?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure, because I took a year off after.
Okay.
And so I ended up being 3 years below you. But okay. I just know you and I were pretty much the only ones in diplomacy and world affairs.
Yeah. We were like amongst the few Black people. Yeah. So I knew of you, and I knew you because we did have some mutual friends, but I didn't really know you very well, given like the class differences and whatnot. So I was really touched when you reached out to say that you were listening to the show and you wanted to come on and share your story, because that's also the purpose of this platform, right? Is to have people be inspired, see themselves in the stories that are being shared, and also be empowered enough to come forward and share their stories with others, you know, because I do believe that we all have something unique yet universal that can resonate with somebody else. So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I think it's really important that we all share different narratives, especially given today's time. I think that we all are living in our own world, and there's nothing like sharing your story to help other people get through things.
Yes, for sure. So how are you doing? How are you coping in this pandemic? I know it hasn't been easy for anyone. Even though 2020 is behind us, it's still pretty much here. You know what I mean? We're still masks on, quarantine, remote working, keeping socially distanced, and hopefully, you know, doing our part to keep ourselves and our community safe. So how are you doing?
You know, I would say I am faring pretty well, all things considering. You know, I'm a hummingbird butterfly, so I cannot stay cooped up for too long.
Yeah.
I suffocate it. So I am finding different ways to, you know, contribute to the community, you know, and protect myself. But for the most part, I'm just staying grounded, meditating, and, you know, I wake up grateful every day, so.
Yes. That same. I try to practice gratitude every single day, and it can be hard, right? And just reminding yourself that just because you're practicing gratitude doesn't mean you can't feel other things. You can't feel frustration.
Right.
You can't feel anger. You can feel all of those things, but also being mindful of the things that are in your life that are wonderful, right? So you might be unemployed, but maybe this is the time you're having now to work on something else that you've been putting off for such a long time. Like for me, you know, having the opportunity to really work on this podcast and really lean into that. And so it feels all good. It feels good.
Yeah. I think ultimately, if you keep yourself busy in a healthy way, in ways that you're still learning skills or practicing skills that you have. Because if you don't use it, you lose it. Mm-hmm. I think that you have a better chance at being, you know, successful once all this is over. But everyone measures success differently, right? But I think ultimately, if you could find a way to keep your brain moving and keep yourself busy in a healthy way, you're already like on top of it. You're already winning.
Yeah, I agree. You recently moved to DC. You were living in Newark before that. What prompted the move?
So it was just time to get some fresh air. I am, like I said, a hummingbird butterfly, and I just can't stay cooped up for too long. And so I wanted a new city that was very busy, or there was action, but it wasn't too overwhelming. There was good culture, great art, good music, and I wanted to just be around people who also think the same way I think a little bit, in terms of just like people being in intellectuals and people appreciating hard work. Not saying that Newark doesn't appreciate hard work, but that was a factor in me choosing DC. And I wanted to be in a space that was very historical, and I can enjoy the architecture as I take morning walks or evening walks or afternoon walks. And I knew I would learn something new once I came down here. But for me, given the pandemic, I felt like I was losing my communication skills. I was being cooped up because, you know, it's hard right now. Everyone's like, you know, trying to find a specific job, maybe something to do with their degree or not. But ultimately, I didn't want to stay idle. There are times in life when stillness is the move, but I felt like I had been being still for long enough. And I've been down here for a little while and navigating, and it just keeps getting better, and I'm grateful for that. And I feel like now I'm remembering what it's like to interact with a lot of people, different people, smelling different things and hearing different things and seeing different things. And, you know, it sounds so small, but when you are in isolation for so long and you kind of are in control of everything, you know, it makes it more difficult for you to adjust once lockdown is over, you know. But I think for the most part, it was about professionalism for me, because I could go 1,000 years without talking to another human being.
Okay, I can't. I can't do that.
It's not healthy. I know it's not healthy. To depend on who you ask, but for me, like I'm at peace. You know what I mean? Mm. Like I grew up the baby and the only girl in a lot of my households, so I'm just used to that. You know, like when all the kids would go outside playing after school, I was the only one at the table doing homework, and it was silent. You know, so that's why I got in the habit of doing homework right after school, because I knew all the boys, they were gonna run out to the basketball court right after school. So by the time they came in for dinner, I had already finished homework, and now I can be loud and scream with them, you know. So it's about balance, you know. And I think for me, I just didn't want to be, I didn't want to lose that communication skill, or, you know, the sensory, that's the word, the sensory stimulation in a professional setting. Because eventually, you know, we're going to get back into the swing of things. But for now, I just want to make sure I don't become agoraphobic, afraid to leave a house.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. So you've started to hint at your childhood, and I wanted to go into that a little bit more, because you mentioned one thing you said was like growing up in different households. Can you tell us more about that, what your childhood was like?
Yeah. So I am a foster kid from New Jersey, and I was born in like the early 90s. So there was a lot happening in, you know, Black communities, and a lot of reasons why they were disenfranchised, you know, from drugs to crime to police brutality. And as a result of the, you know, the crack cocaine, you know, endemic, I guess they call it, a lot of kids, you know, were born crack babies. and a lot of kids lost their parents. And so there is probably a group of us, or a demographic of like Black and brown kids who were forced into, you know, foster care as a result of it. But I say all that to say, you know, kids aren't in foster care just, you know, because the system wants to take their, you know, take them away from their parents. You know, sometimes parents have a lot going on. Sometimes that's because of themselves. And then sometimes that is because of, you know, systems, mm-hmm. right? So that's something I'm learning as I've gotten older. Either way, I've lived in several different foster homes, and some, you know, not so nice or terrible, and then some where I was able to learn a lot. And there's one home in particular where my guardian, her name was Mama Joyce. And we were pretty, it was a lot of us. I was a baby girl, and it was all boys. I was the only girl. And we lived in at the top of the building on Elizabeth Ave. So I used to fall asleep staring at the Twin Towers, you know, but she and I shared a room. And the boys, they shared another room. And so, you know, being the baby girl and the only girl, that meant like whenever we did get food, I turned my head. There was food missing off the plate. that meant, you know, constant video games, you know, fighting for the TV, you know, and that's not an argument I'm going to win. So I got in the habit of just listening to music. I got a little radio, and Mama Joyce, she had all these CDs and all these tapes. And so, you know, I would just spend the days when I wasn't in school just like listening to like Marvin Gaye and Al Green, which was her favorite. You know, The Temptations, all that kind of music. She was from the mm-hmm. South, and she cooked, you know, really Southern food and neck bones and collard mm-hmm. greens and things like that. And the interesting thing about living with her is before I lived with her, I was a kid who didn't really speak. So when I moved with her, I was 5 years old on my way to being 6 years old. And all the other houses had thought like I had a learning disability, and because I didn't talk, I didn't speak. And if I did, I whispered it to a specific person, and they said I had a really high-pitched voice. So for a long time, they thought that I was like kind of, you know, that kid, mm-hmm. if you know what mm-hmm. I mean by that kid. But I got with her, and she bought me like as an introduction to the home, she brought me like this pack of Dr. Seuss books. And, you know, she would leave a lot because she was also a childcare worker, like in the area. And sometimes, you know, she'd leave me with one of the cousins or one of her kids, an adult kid. And I would just pretty much spend all day watching PBS Kids Network. So Reading Rainbow, Cyber Kids, you know, Mr. Rogers, Sesame Street, like, you know, Dragon Tales. I mean, the list goes on, you know, but for a long time, even they just thought I you know, I was that kid because I didn't speak mm-hmm. and I would only talk to her. So I finally talked to one of my older brothers, and we didn't know each other because we both had been in the system for a while.
How old were you when you entered the system, the foster care system?
Ooh, probably about 2 years old.
So do you have any memories of your birth parents or birth
family? Oh, yes. I was able to meet them later. Yeah, I was able to meet them later. And that's a whole other
story.
But I didn't speak, and I watch a lot of PBS Kids, and I would constantly read Dr. Seuss books over and over. So when I finally warmed up to one of my older brothers, I basically asked him to read a book to me. And he read the book to me, and I immediately just read it back to him. And he said, "You do talk. You do speak." And I was like, mm-hmm. like as if it was just a secret mm-hmm. I had known. But looking back on that time, I think that I had been through so much trauma, you know, even by the time I was 5 years old or 6 years old, that I didn't really know how to communicate. I just saw people communicate in angry ways, or like it was always drama or inappropriate words. Now, I did cuss like a sailor as a little girl, like a sailor. And I still do. And I still, you know, try and be conscious of it. But I think it was doing a lot of reading, you know, when I couldn't fight over, when I wasn't going to win the fight over the TV. And then it was watching a lot of PBS Kids Network, you know, learning how to pronounce things, learning how to, you know, add and subtract and multiply and different things like that. So I give a lot of credit to, you know, people say, oh, technology and TV is terrible for you. And I say, well, you know, I was that kid that instead of, you know, doing whatever, I was really into, you know, learning how to speak through TV. And, you know, by the time I was 6 years old, and I'm not saying this to brag, but I'm saying this to say, like, these kind of programs and networks are effective. By the time I was 6 years old, I was already writing short stories. I wasn't really speaking, but I was writing short stories and poetry.
Do you remember your first, what again, your first story was about? Your first short story?
I do.
What was it?
It was about Godzilla and Britney Spears visiting Newark at the same time.
Wow. Very imaginative.
And it was, I know, it was inspired by an article I read in the newspaper. Mm. 6 years old, I read in the newspaper that Britney Spears had come to, I don't remember, it was either New York City or Newark for a concert. Mm. And I was a huge Britney Spears fan. So it was like front page on the Star Ledger. And I was like, oh, I know, I write a short story about that. And Godzilla. Anyways, I got a good grade on it. Mama Joyce was so proud and shocked because, again, everyone thought I was that kid, that she hung it on the refrigerator for like 3 years.
Wow,
it was
great. Wow. How long did you live with Mama Joyce?
Mama Joyce passed away before my 11th birthday, so I would say about 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, but she had gotten really sick by the time I turned 9 or 10. Mm. So I never saw it coming, because I think that she hid it very well.
What was she sick with?
I don't know.
You just
stress. Yeah.
How many kids was she caring for in the home?
Okay. Let's see. That never left, there was about four of us. But that would come over in and out, maybe about five or six total. But that's not to mention if, you know, my brother and the cousins brought their friends over and, you know, they end up staying a night for 2 or 3 days, you know. So it was kind of a situation where, like, she had an open home. Everyone knew that about her. Everybody called her Mama Joyce. But she had certain kids that she kept, that we lived there. Like, that was our permanent address. So.
Yeah. So then what happened once Mama Joyce passed? Where did you go to live after?
I reconnected with different members of my family. And that's like a little touchy to talk about, but what happened that saved me probably was that I got even more into school. I didn't let whatever was happening at home affect how well I performed at school. Sometimes I did, you know, that's not to say sometimes I didn't lash out and didn't understand why I was lashing out. But for the most part, I got really into like math. I got really into music. You know, I would pick up different instruments. I always was into music. You know, it was like, I always played instruments. I've probably been playing instruments since the age of like six years old. That was the first thing Mama Joyce got me into. like playing like different instruments. And I just kept going. You know, I taught myself how to
play. Did you have a favorite instrument?
The bass guitar.
The bass guitar.
I taught myself.
I don't play any instruments besides the recorder.
That's not a bad one. No, the recorder's dope.
The recorder.
That's everybody's like first thing.
Yeah. In elementary school, my brothers, I danced. So my brothers played music. So, but yeah.
Right.
But yeah, the recorder is the only thing I know how to play.
There's nothing wrong with that. You learn about different pitches and how you can control and respond to different pitches. And I don't dance. You know, I always wanted to do ballet, but we couldn't afford it. So, you know, of course, like every school, you know, every girl in, you know, the urban areas, you get a group of friends together, you just make up a dance to mm-hmm. a song, to a hip hop song. That's not dancing. I mean, it's dancing.
That is dancing. It's not formal training, but it is dancing. I mean, so much of formal training comes from, you know, comes from informal people just dancing and observing. So yeah, and a lot of times people who don't have formal training have way better rhythm than the people
who have formal training.
They do.
I can never get into the formal training. I'm a musician, so I listen for the rhythm. Like, you know, so anytime I would go to a class and they would give a dance instruction, and it'd be like, you know, one, two, boom, cat. I'm like, what? They're like, boom, boom. So I would just ignore them. And just, I found that when I would, you know, do their little instructions, I would just look crazy. But when I would just ignore them and listen to the actual beat or listen to the song and let that guide me, I would get better at it, you know?
So music and dance, so music in school was like your escape?
Yeah.
During this time?
Basically, yep. Music in school, hip hop, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I was super, super, super into hip hop, and I would write poetry. Like, that was something I would do to pass the time in school, in class, at home, on the toilet. You know, I remember my cousin banging on a toilet, on a bathroom door, like, you know, hurry up, I need it. I'm just like in there on the toilet taking a poop, like writing a poem, you know, just like 8 years old. But another thing that I think kept me focused was I used to play chess a lot. I used to play chess a lot. And one of my cousins who lived in the house, he was only a year older than me. But they called him Hustle Man. He was, because he would run errands for all the older folk in the building, you know, and then he'd earn money for it. And then he'd come back and we counted together. Obviously, he might give me a snack from the corner store, but like, you know, but he taught me how to, like, you know, kind of, and he, like I said, he was only a year older than me. So, like, you know, I'm 8, 9 years old. He's like 9, 10 years old. And he already had the nickname for, like, you know, if you need something done, he was fast too. But guess what? He couldn't read. He couldn't read that well. But if you wanted something to get physically done, you knew to call him. So if I needed help, you know, doing a chore, he would help, you know, or if I was like, can you please walk me here? You know, because I'm afraid, like, you know, he walks me to school every morning, you know, and sometimes will wait for me after school. But he mostly played basketball. We used to play card games, and he always cheated me. We played card games, we played chess, and we played checkers. So I could never beat him. And at first I was like, man, I suck. But then I realized really quickly, I learned to pay attention to his hands, and I learned to pay attention to different ways that he cheat. And that's pretty much how I started beating him. Or at least I was able to call him out on it. Like, I know what you did. I saw that. And he would just laugh at me, you know, and say like, all right, you're getting better, you know? So I know most people wouldn't say like, oh, like, you know, that's not right that he would do that to you, but it made me stronger. And it made me pay attention to specific details and specific moves that people use to win, whether good or bad. So, yeah.
That's beautiful that you had someone like that in your life, you know, and because it's all, I think at the end of the day, it's those people, right? Those memories. Like I could see your face as you were talking about him. You lit up, you know, and
yeah.
So it's beautiful that you had that. Even with
we got separated. Yeah. We got separated, and so I don't know where he is today, but I know that we had a lot of adventures, you know, in the neighborhood. Like just growing up, like taking care of ourselves, because like I said, Mama Joyce was pretty sick, and I think sicker than I realized at the time as a kid. So we spent a lot of time setting our own schedule. She only ruled us by breakfast, time to leave for school, and dinner. Other than that, you know, we were pretty much raising ourselves for the most part. I mean, she always made sure we had clean clothes. Even if sometimes we didn't always have enough food, we had clean clothes. And so we just had a lot of adventures, you know, and I think we both really learned from those adventures, but we went in separate directions. And I say all that to say like, yeah, you know, growing up as a foster kid could be rough. You know, she and I, that whole household, we were poor. We were on food stamps, welfare. I remember going down to the welfare office with her. I remember having to wear Payless shoes. I remember having to shop at these really cheap places. And I remember, you know, like I said, being the baby girl, I turned my head, food's missing off the plate because I wasn't, you know, more aware of like, the competition of the ecosystem in the household. But I learned a lot, you know, and I think it helped me out and it made me really sharp today. But there's a specific lesson I learned.
What is it?
When I was about maybe 9 years old, we were so poor. So it was like everyone in the building had on these like Chuck Taylors. Like, you know, that was the hot new sneaker. There were different colors. Like everybody was like super fresh and fly with the Chuck Taylors. And we could not afford it. I was wearing Payless. And my Payless were like, you know. But I remember it was summertime. And like I said, we lived at the top of the building on Elizabeth Ave. And it was really hot in the house. Like it was just so hot. You know, the boys were getting super restless. You know, it wasn't like she could give the money to like, go to Six Flags or some water park. But she just decided that like, okay, we're all going to go out. Cause we lived across the street from Weekway Park. She said, we're all going to go out. We're going to have a picnic, you know? And so, I guess she, you know, used the food stamps or the Family First card to like get some food. We made sandwiches. We had chips and snacks and everything like that. And she packed a bag for us. And we came down the stairs. And I just remember like that moment, just everyone had different like colors on and different color Chuck Taylors. And I just thought to myself, like, and they were all looking at me and looking at us like, look at us and look at what you saw, you know. And we were standing right there at the entrance. And I just remember saying to myself, like, you know, I could either be jealous and get angry, or I could just understand that, like, we can't afford it. And me getting jealous and angry isn't going to change the fact that we can't afford it. But we got this bag of snacks, got Mama Joyce and my crazy cousins behind me, and we're going to go down to the park. And I'm still going to have fun, whether I got Chuck Taylors on or not. And so it taught me this lesson in jealousy, you know, and just being grateful for who I am and what I have already. I say maybe 4 or 5 years after that moment, I started collecting Chuck Taylors. For a while, you know, I started collecting them, and then I grew out of that and, you know, didn't even care about sneakers anymore. But that moment taught me that, like, look, at the end of the day, just because I can't have what other people have right now doesn't mean that I can't be patient enough to either work for it or develop it until I do, you know? And so I think ever since that moment, I just felt like jealousy was a self-abusive emotion, because at the end of the day, I can't change it. I couldn't change it. We cannot afford Chuck Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, like, we barely could afford dinner.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's a beautiful lesson, I think, in our society, especially with social media. Social media is great in so many ways, but at the same time, it can create a level of competition, envy, like it can stir up feelings in yourself that makes you not necessarily content or grateful for what you do have, right? Because you're looking at the next person being like, well, they're on vacation, they're doing this, they're doing that. And it's really, and it's really hard and not healthy unless you have developed like that sense, like you mentioned, that understanding that, like, you know what, I could either get jealous or I can be like, and understand, like, I just can't afford it. Like, why even bother? Right. And just be grateful for what you do have.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. And not so much as like, I can't afford it, but more so like, I think at the time as a kid, it was like, I could get jealous or realize that my circumstances are different, you know? So now as an adult, it's like, why get jealous when I'm on my own path? I'm on my own journey, you know? And this is the practice in Buddhism coming out of me. But everyone has their own journey, right? And ultimately, like, I could get jealous or I could just, like, not care and focus on what's important for me. You brought up a really good point about how social media kind of keeps us in this, like, constant comparison thing, and or this constant comparison, like, you know, rat race. And I was saying, ultimately, it's not so much about, oh, I can't live like they live on Instagram or Facebook because I can't afford it. It's more about, like, I can't live like that because that's not my journey. Like, that's not what I'm doing right now. You know, I definitely haven't posted everywhere I've been on Instagram. Not even close, because sometimes I take pictures and do photography just for me, you know, just so I can show my kids in the future. And I think given that moment when I was 9 years old of me being like, it wasn't just so much about like, I'm not going to get jealous of them. It was like, I'm not going to allow what other people are doing dictate how I feel about myself or how I should feel for the day. You know, and that ties into Buddhism now as an adult for me, you know, because it's like, I don't like to be a follower.
Yeah.
And that's not that I can't blend in or, you know, shapeshift and fit in. It's more so of like, I'm not a group thinker, you know, unless I can state, this is how I feel about things. And if you agree with me, awesome. If not, you deserve some respect and peace as well. So when it comes to like the jealousy thing, it's more of like not allowing other people to dictate how good you feel about yourself, you know, because you can't let what they got going on determine your value.
Yes. Preach, girl. Preach. No, seriously. It seems so simple, right? But I know it's not always that simple, right? But it's something like you constantly have to remind yourself, right? And you're constantly going to be put in situations where that's your values and sense of worth might be challenged, right? But you have to keep affirming for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the one thing I've learned, it's like almost like boundary setting. Like, boundaries is not for anybody, it's for yourself, right? To set, right? So yes, it's the ma'am. Same thing. It's like your self-worth is not for anybody to set, right? But you have to know your self-worth, right? Mm-hmm. And know that at your core, and know that despite what your circumstances may be at this moment in time, it doesn't take away from who you are, right? And it's like earlier today, I saw Toni Morrison, quote, and I had to post it I'm always posting on Kume's. For those of you who are not following us on social media, you should, because that's where all the engagement happens. But the quote was, you are not the work you do, you are the person you are, right? And the same thing can be said about, even, you're not the clothes, you're not the shoes you wear, you know, you are the person you are, right? You know, and so I can only imagine, you know, given the circumstances you were in as a child, you know, you had to really develop a sense of yourself, right? And really understand that, and understand that, like, yes, I might not have all these things, but you did have other things. You know, you did have an adult that loved you, right? You did. There were things about it that came out of
it. And I was always a straight A student. You wasn't gonna challenge me on the, you know, the math board. Like, you know, like, you wasn't gonna beat me at a reading test. Like, that wasn't happening. Like, you know, so those are the kind of things I was proud of.
I know that you later on went to boarding school. How did, you know, coming from that environment, then going to a kind of environment where there's a lot more affluence, it's no longer just the sneakers or whatever, right? It's so much more, right? How did you still struggle with your sense of self-worth?
So I think that's a great question, because what I definitely think that is important for us to think about when it comes to, like, jealousy is societal conditioning. So, you know, the standards of beauty and the standards of, like, a woman's worth. So now, 9 years old, you know, what matters is sneakers and clothes. But, you know, as you come into being a preteen, you know, now what matters is, am I pretty? Am I too dark? Am I light? You know, how's my hair? And so somehow I definitely struggle with insecurities, as most kids do, you know, as most teenage girls do. But I was a White Foundation scholar, and, which is not that, it's very similar to, like, the ABC program, or, like, Feeds.
It's a prep program.
Yeah. So ABC prep.
For students from under-resourced backgrounds, getting them to prep schools and whatever opportunities those lead to.
And I think for White Foundation, it ended up, it's like, you know, White Foundation Scholar, like, you build a certain type of camaraderie. And they did it wasn't just prep in terms of, like, getting good grades or tutorage. It was life skills. So, you know, we got a lot of support in terms of being reminded of our positionality. So you are Black or Latino, or just a kid of color, a person of color, ethnic background. You may or may not be able to afford what these kids can afford. But remember, that's not why you're there. You're there for your education. You're there to enrich yourself. You're there to see something different. I think for me, I was there for safety and for peace of mind, because I had, you know, like I said, been in different foster homes, and there was all sorts of different types of abuse. But when I went to boarding school, I was on campus, I was myself. And it felt like, It took me a while to choose which boarding school I wanted to go to, right? Like, it took me maybe like a year before I chose the school I chose. And I did a lot of thinking about it. I had about 15 schools to choose from, but they were like top three. And I did a lot of thinking about it. And I ultimately chose a school that was, like, very open-minded. I would say this, they're like old money, but they're the old money that they were just, like, open-minded old money. Like, you know, I think ultimately the league of boarding schools that, you know, I was in, they constantly reminded everyone to not only be our best selves, but to be humble. So kids weren't pulling up to campus in, like, a Porsche, you know, or they weren't, their parents might have been pulling up in a Porsche truck, you know, on parents' weekend, but parents' weekend was, like, twice a year, right? You know, the kids, like, they were walking around in, like, you know, a pair of L.L. Bean slippers that they had for, like, 3 years, you know, so they had raggedy holes in it and stuff. And, you know, they didn't care about that. They didn't really care about that. I think, ultimately, the boarding school I chose, it was Nesire Males. It means do not yield to, that was our school motto, Nesire Males, do not yield to adversity. And, you know, it was ultimately about being your best self. And we dealt with, like, racist things, but it was very rare at the school I chose. But even the other schools in our league, you know, Deerford Academy, their motto is you have to earn your heritage.
Ooh.
So we talking heirs, Ford heirs, you know, people who pretty much make this country go round. And just because that's your daddy, who were you? So that was the kind of, like, league of schools I went to. It was always like, be your best self, but also remain humble, and always stick together, you know? So it was like, even if you totally get on my nerves, we're both Pelicans. Mm. So I'm still going to have your back when it goes down. Right. Yeah. You know, so.
Did you enjoy your time there?
You know, I think I did. I think there were moments where I went through transitions, like most teenagers do. You know, I got me a little boyfriend back home who was, like, you know, really popular in the streets or whatever. And, like, I would miss it. You know, I'm from the urban area. It's high school. We talking, like, you know, and I was about 3 hours away. So, you know, and I was still really close with my friends from home. So it was like, girl, like, they would tell me all the juice and the details. And this went on for about 4 years until I graduated. They would tell me all the juice and the details. And I'm like, you know, like, oh, I saw your boyfriend with such and such at the movie theaters. And I'm like, fuck, I have Saturday class next week. I can't go. You know, so, like, but then there was weekends where, like, I was just like, I have to get out of here because, like, you know, like, I can't relate to anyone right now. And, you know, my foster pops, before he passed away, he would just drive up from Newark and just, like, scoop me, even if it was just for one night, just so I could see my friends. And, you know, I was back up the next night and back focusing, and, you know, homework was getting done and stuff. And so in terms of just, like, it was never really about jealousy for me at boarding school. It was mostly about, can I balance the workload? I put a lot of pressure on myself as a, in general, but definitely as a teenager, I wasn't comparing myself on, like, money and things like that. Cause I got voted class president, you know, I was peer counselor. I was doing speeches in front of my classmates and, like, you know, different things like that. It was workload. It was always workload for me, and being an athlete and different crushes, you know, like, oh my God, I have a crush on him, but I'm, like, terrified to talk to him because I'm Black, you know? So it wasn't so much jealousy, like, oh, you know, he's dating her because she's white. It was more so like, I'm not even going to try, because I just automatically assume, because I'm dark skinned with, like, curly hair, like, you know, and, but it never breeded, like, jealousy for me. I always felt like, well, that's how they're raised, you know, like, in my mind, I'm like, I think that, you know, white guys or these white, my white peers, I think they're just raised to, not date us and only be friends with us. And I just accepted it as being it is what it is. So I think that jealousy, that lesson about jealousy, it just stuck with me ever since that moment, because I felt like, well, what can I do? Like, I'm chocolate, you know, I'm like this chocolate pie of a bunch of different ethnicities, you know, Native American, African American, Italian, like, you know, it's just like a hodgepodge of, like, culture. But I came out, like, darker skin with curly hair, and you know, like, it is what it is. What am I going to do? You know, this is what God wanted me to look like. So I'm not going to argue with that. And ultimately, once again, feeling like there's no reason to be jealous, because what am I going to do? Start bleaching my skin? Like, that's not happening.
Yeah.
No.
Hell no. So was there any moment in your adult life, right, where this lesson that you learned early in life was challenged? Is there, you know, post-college, post-working, not even jealousy, but anywhere your sense of worth was challenged, where you really had to affirm yourself in that moment that this is who I am, and regardless of who's around me, you know, I know who I am. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And speaking of social media, LinkedIn, you know, I have been working since I was 13, whether it's under the table or over the table. I've always valued building my resume and learning those skills and then picking up those skills really quickly. And so I put myself through college. I always had a job. It was really difficult to balance the schoolwork and the community activism and working and balancing the budget. But ultimately, I felt like it was really important. And I just felt like once I graduated, I was having a really tough time, like finding a job. And I'm just looking and realizing, like, man, all these internships I did every summer, all these hours I spent working all throughout school year, you know, I'm like sort of a like published researcher, sort of, you know, I do have a paper that's public, can be publicly read and downloaded. And somehow, like, I'm having a tougher time breaking into corporate than like all these other peers who I know for sure were, you know, chilling, you know, like just chilling every summer, you know? And so I think every once in a while I would hit these career roadblocks where it was very like, it was kind of clear that I was like, I always went through life thinking like, I don't care. I'm not going to let my race or my gender hold me back. Like that's not a barrier for me. But it wasn't until I graduated from college that I was like, oh man, that might actually be a barrier for me. And I have a really good network. And like I said, I was popular in like, you know, schools and stuff, but it didn't change the fact that like sometimes when I would get into these work environments, I would still have to deal with like racial ignorance or just like people going out of their way to remind me like, yeah, you may be better at this job than me, but you're still Black, you're still a woman, and you're still from North. And I kind of went through maybe like, I would say, maybe 3 months of just feeling like, man, I know I work harder than these kids. Like, I know I've always worked harder than these kids. How are these kids already managers at these companies? You know, how are these kids already associates at these companies? You know, I got a job while interviewing with a concussion. I had just gotten the concussion probably an hour prior to the interview, you know, and I did such a good job that I was hired there, you know. And then I say that to say, like, I pushed myself through so much adversity because Nesida Malas, and yet I'm still hitting these racial and gender inequalities. And I think for about 3 months, I felt like there was that comparison. Like, man, this person, I know you didn't work over the summer. I know you didn't have a job during that year. Like, I'm just looking at your LinkedIn, and your LinkedIn doesn't even slightly compare to my LinkedIn. Or like the resume, and I don't lie on my resume because I don't have to. I've left things off my resume because I feel like as a Black woman that, you know, maybe they feel like I'm, you know, bragging or whatever. So I think that like that's the challenge of like comparison for me. but it doesn't turn into jealousy. Like, I want what you got and I'm not going to stop until I get it. It turns into more of like, okay, hold up. Let me take a step back and realize that now that I'm out of school settings, you know, or education setting, the navigation, my navigation and way of thinking has to be a bit more flexible. And it's interesting to think that like higher learning and higher education, depending on I got really lucky. I'm not going to lie. Me personally, I got really lucky. But higher learning and higher education settings, you know, it shields us a little bit more than like you could really think. Like, you know, in my head, I'm like looking around, you know, campus. I'm like, yeah, we can use more, you know, people of color on this campus, you know, not to mention that, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with adding more diversity, ultimately, right? But the world outside of those education settings isn't as flexible and open-minded.
Well, we need to push on various fronts, you know, it's not just education, absolutely, but so many fronts need to be pushed, and
absolutely,
people need to be uncomfortable. Like, I'm so over trying to make people comfortable in order to embrace something. It's like, no, you need to lean into being uncomfortable. You know, yeah. If I have to be uncomfortable for the majority of my life, like, you know what I mean? So, but yeah.
Uncomfortableness, I agree with you. That uncomfortableness is what is the reason why I'm quote unquote more skilled than you.
Yeah.
You know, it's not so much that I'm like this super special, awesome person, because, like, I mean, I probably am.
You are.
I'm joking, but ultimately, it's the toughness, yeah, that made me this sharp.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't just pop out the womb sharp. I had to put in the work. I had to put in the grit. You know, I had to teach myself at 9 years old not to be jealous that somebody has what I can't afford or somebody went. You know what I mean? Like, those type of things could really slow you down. And I think that ultimately, once you find like what you're good at and you recognize that, like, okay, what I want to do, there aren't a lot of like Black women or just women and people of color, especially not a lot of foster kids or kids from Newark, you know? So I accept the challenge that they ain't gonna just let me up in there. We got a lot of cultural, you know, healing to do, especially given, you know, last week's incidents, you know, January 6th incidents at, you know, the Capitol in Washington, D.C. I think that it exposed things. So in a way, it's terrible that those things happen. But it felt, as a Black person, you know, who has pushed myself through so many different settings and education settings and so much trauma, just to be stable, normal, educated, and healthy, even down to the way I eat and sleep, and to still feel like I keep hitting those barriers simply because of my complexion or because I don't denounce, you know, hip hop or urban culture, but I'm still articulate, you know, I'm still a code switcher, a shapeshifter. And to know that everyone says like, oh, suck it up, racism doesn't exist, or, oh, you know, these educated kids are coming out of these top colleges and not getting a job because of them. They're not applying themselves. But then it turns out the certain people who were at that rally, that riot wasn't even a rally, it was a riot. Those were lawyers, you know, doctors, like actual politicians, you know, people who have power to make recruiting decisions. And I'm sure it was some recruiters in there too, like, you know, people who have power to make, you know, those economic identity decisions. You know, am I gonna, you know, even thinking about your background, you're very well skilled, like highly skilled, highly trained. But imagine, like, you've always dreamed of working at this one company, but it turns out the recruiter, they might have interviewed you just to say they tried a diversity thing, but like the recruiter was actually at the rally last week.
Right. Correction. Not rally. But yeah, you know, no, it's true.
Right, I know.
Yeah. It is true. Everything you've said like resonates so deeply with me, you know, and moments in my life where you really either wonder, sometimes you get in a room and then you're like, am I in this room because you really just want to make yourself feel good because you're not even listening to me, you know, or what I have to say. And also then understanding that it's like, that's them, you know, it's, yes, we have to work on, like I said, so many fronts, but mm-hmm. On a personal level, it's also this challenge of making sure that they're, because sometimes I call it sickness. It's really a sickness. Racism, white supremacy, all of that sickness doesn't, it does that I don't let it get to me as much, you know, on a personal level. I mean, obviously there's so much of it that I can't control, right? At this point in time, there's, you know, we just can't control parts of it. But yeah, it really touched me when you were telling your story, because I could see parts of myself in those different environments, right? And finding mm-hmm. the strength to continue and not to even, you know, like when you, I still remember in college when, I'm not going to say names, but when people were going around saying where they're going to be working, come, you know, because some people had already been given offers and whatnot. And I was fortunate enough to get a job offer, like in June, I got one right out mm-hmm. of college. And I got a lot mm-hmm. of help with, you know, finding a job. So, and I'm very grateful to so many people for their help and in my life, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I also knew there were people who, you know, were already saying where they were getting, and you're like, how? Like, you're just sitting like, how? You're just like, what? Were we in the same class? Like, but then you also understand how social capital works and how, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. how our society works, right? And that's, I'm like, how nepotism works and all of that type of stuff. And that's why I say to so many students, young people of color, and I'm just like, it's wonderful to work as hard as you can in your school, but also do not undervalue the time spent with people and getting to know people, right? Mm-hmm. Because those are the relationships. Those are the relationships that got them in that job, right? Mm-hmm. And don't feel bad if somebody you know helped you get, like, don't feel bad, you know, because sometimes there's like a thing. And I'm like, no, you know, but spend time cultivating relationships with your, I don't say sucking up. I don't say if you don't like somebody, don't yeah. do it, you know, but yeah. spend time getting to know people in your, mm-hmm. in your class. I got the Richter Fellowship and I was able to go to Sierra Leone for the summer and do research fully paid for, which, you know, as mm-hmm. you know, from Oxy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And part of it was because I was talking to a classmate about what she was doing this summer. She was like, oh, I'm working on my application for the Richter. And I didn't know. It was the summer after our freshman year. I had no idea what this was. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. And she was like, the Richter. And she told me about it and it changed my life. You know, that experience changed so yep. much for me, you know?
Yeah.
And again, it's like, those are resources that are available sometimes on campus, but you might not know because
yep. of
your background, right? And mm-hmm. some people already know and they know how to navigate that system. You know what I mean? And yep. so the you know, cultivating healthy relationships with people enable you to sometimes have opportunities, you know, economic opportunities. And but yeah, what you were, I know I just went off on a tangent, but I just really wanted to share that and let you know that like you're not alone in feeling that way. Come see here what people are saying their job mm-hmm. offers. You're like, really? But yeah. I'm curious to know, you know, we've talked at length now and I'm so, so grateful for you for sharing your story because there's so much of it that I didn't know. You know, I knew about the boarding school because we have a mutual friend, you know, that yeah. was in the same program as you. Yeah. And then there were just little things I knew here and about, but I didn't really fully know your story. And mm-hmm. and I'm so grateful that you have shared with me because, again, like that's the power of our stories. Like it's unique, but there's aspect of it that's still so universal, right? I'm curious to know now what you think of yourself, right? Because we've been talking so much about you and self-worth and all of these type of things. Like, what is your truth about yourself?
I think for me, what I feel about myself is that I'm built tough, you know, and ultimately I went through a lot. I've been through a lot. But when people look at me and when they hear me speak and the way I interact with them, they don't even know, you know, and I always told myself I didn't want to let these experiences make me a hard, evil, and mean person. Because if you knew even more of what I've been through, I would have every reason to be a monstrous. But, you know, I came across Buddhism. I think I introduced Buddhism when I was 11, and then I kept studying it here and there because, you know, I've been baptized, a typical. And then I also grew up in like a Muslim city, very large Islamic population. And so I've taken a bunch of different religions and like spiritual practices and really made them my own. Mm-hmm. And I always said, you know, there's enough pain and struggle and horrible things in the world. I always wanted to leave anywhere I go better than I found it. And any person I meet, you know, leave them feeling better than I found them. And that doesn't mean I'm a people pleaser, because like, if you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
you know, moving on. And I stand firm on that. I'm sure people will tell you that. But just because, you know, you feel like you may not get along with my vibe, like, that doesn't make me feel like I failed at something. But I think ultimately for me, like, I care about where I spend my energy, because where you spend your energy grows. Think about it. You know, which plant you have, if you have a lavender plant or a, you know, rose garden or whatever, you know, whoever gets the most, you know, sunlight or water or, you know, just food and feed grows. You know, and ultimately where you spend your energy, it grows. So I try to remain energy conscious, you know, not just on some, I want to be peaceful. Like, yes, Lord, like, you know, not so much for that, because this is the devout thing to do, but because it's what makes me feel good, right? Like, there's different times in my life where I'm very social and I just need people. But at this point in my life, you know, I can only handle other, you know, interaction through professionalism or through work in a work setting. But outside of that, I like to explore by myself and like spend my time, you know, at one specific place for as long as I want to, you know? So I think for me, it's just a matter of like, there's nothing no one else has that I want that I don't feel like I can't work hard to get it myself. And I think that I'm built tough, but I'm very beautiful.
Yeah, you are beautiful. You are beautiful, and you have a beautiful spirit, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm so touched.
I'm lucky, though. I'm so lucky. Like, I say this to myself every morning, like, I'm so lucky. I have so many things to be grateful for, and like, I am just lucky. And that's why I say, like, you know, I'm grateful to be beautiful. I'm lucky to be beautiful. I didn't always think I was beautiful. I didn't actually realize I was beautiful until I was like 24 years old. And I was like, oh wow, I might actually be beautiful. But I was raised to like ignore that. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, what was your report card like? You know, how long did it take you to finish this test? Like, you know, did you make it to practice today, to athlete practice today? Were you late? You know, did you speak articulately enough in class? So, and I think that, like, while that totally is what made me tough and hard, it beauty was the last thing on my mind. Like, you know, because where I'm from, a lot of girls are beautiful there. I mean, gorgeous. But it doesn't matter, because if you aren't tough enough to take care of yourself, you will get swallowed and crumbled, you know? And so I think here I am. I'm one of those people who's not afraid to, you know, lace up my bootstraps and take care of myself and push through adversity and still carry other people and other things and other movements. But I make sure that I still am gentle, you know, with other people and with myself. I make sure that I still feel and look and present gently, because, you know, ultimately, I don't want to wear all of that. You know, I've experienced it. It's in my toolbox, it's in my toolkit, but I don't want anyone to look at me and say, oh, man, you dealt with some stuff and I could tell, you know? And if they did, I wouldn't care. But I think that's my treat for me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been through it all, but you know what? My skin is clearing up. Like, you know, like, my skin is soft. Yeah. Like, you know, like, man, yesterday was tough, but I got pretty nails, or, like, you know, just little things like that. Little things like that. So, but I'm lucky. Like, yeah. I'm lucky. I'm built tough, and I'm just grateful. Like, you know, most people would crumble under circumstances that I've had to, like, push through, and you know, if I spend so much energy being jealous of other people, like, oh, I want that, or, you know, I wish I had rich, stable parents, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wouldn't even be here in peace. Like, I'm in peace right now in this moment, and just grateful to even have time to share this story with you, you know what I mean? Like, and to hear grateful. Your story.
I'm grateful.
You could relate.
Of course, girl. Of course. You know, I think if we care to listen to others, we can relate to their story, you know? Not all of it, obviously. But
yeah,
but parts of it, you know. If you care, if you listen, take time and be gentle, right? Be gentle with yourself and be gentle with others. You can see one another, and I think and recognize our common humanity, right? And that's for me, like, one of the reasons why I really wanted to create this platform, because I really wanted us to be able to see ourselves in each other's stories, right? And know that if we listen to one another's stories, we can see ourselves, right? And we can then have all of the inspiration, all of the resources, right, to really move ourselves forward, right, and hopefully create a community, right, and move forward. So thank you again, Leah. I am again so, so grateful for you for sharing your story, and I know that despite everything you've been through, you're already making a mark in this world, right? Even if that's the other thing I'm learning, it's like making a mark in this world doesn't have to be a book written about you or a movie made after you, right? It's really about how you're remembered, right? And so the people you come across, right, how do they remember you? And this is one way that so many people are going to come across you and going to meet you without even meeting you physically, right? But they're going to meet you, meet your soul, meet your spirit. And hopefully, if there's somebody out there with foster care or have been in the foster care system, can hear your story and maybe see themselves and, you know, whatever it is. Take away whatever they want to take away from this. But I appreciate you, and I thank you again for making time to come on the show and share. And I look forward to just watching you shine so brightly.
Girl, I'm a try.
You are.
But thanks for having me.
For sure. And we'll be in touch. Do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you, or your?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
So you can check me out on Instagram. It's the only social media I have, at MS_MOCHASPICE, Miss Smoke Spice. And there you'll find the link to my research paper that I published in South Africa. Okay. It's very, you know, it was very important to me, and it's not perfect, but if you could look past a few errors and listen to the message, is what is more important to me. And you can check me out on LinkedIn, Leah Washington on LinkedIn. I care more about LinkedIn than I do Instagram. I barely post on Instagram.
Okay. Where in South Africa? Because I was in South Africa.
So I did Cape Town, Joburg, Eastern Cape. So like we're out there where Steve Biko is from.
Mm. You did that in Western undergrad?
Cape. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Oh, okay. They didn't really have, they brought it back basically. They brought the program back that year because most people were going to South Africa.
Yeah.
And they were staying at, going to University of Cape Town. But I, you know, like I say, I like to travel. See, being a foster kid makes it so that you don't mind just like,
you can be in other environments, right? Because you're forced to adjust and adapt quickly, right? So there are skills. Every circumstance teaches us something, right? And it's either we choose to take those lessons from those adversity and apply it in someplace else.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like
basically.
Yeah, but it's crazy because sometimes I think the most gentle people I've met, like gentle and not like a
docile.
But gentle, I find, as people have actually been through a lot, and I admire that way more, right? Because I feel like when you've been through so much and you're still able to be gentle, mm-hmm. and, you know, not delusional, but like, you know, but to, I think gentle also is meaning, it means that I know who I am. I know my worth. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. that takes a level of gentleness. Right, you don't have
to. And I grew up with a temper, Yelka.
Yeah,
I grew up with a temper. I grew up physically fighting. Like I have physically fighting. You know, I grew up with a real temper, and that's why I always, you know, I say like I'm like this on purpose. I'm like this on purpose. Like people have no idea the wrath I can unleash. You know, and what's understood doesn't have to be explained. But I don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, in Buddhism, anger is a weak emotion.
Hmm.
And that sets me free in a lot of ways.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it does. Yes. I'm like, right? Anger is a weak emotion. Because people just always try to test
me. Right? You just got to release sometimes. You just got to, it's, yeah. God knows my name means peaceful people, and I ain't always peaceful, but I am gentle.
They always testing the black woman, man. They always testing us.
And sometimes, you know, a little silence says, you know, you don't have to say much sometimes, you know. It's my silence will go a longer way sometimes, you know. Silence about the important, you know, not things I need to say, you know, but like sometimes. I'm gonna let you just think what you want to think, right? I'm gonna just, because like you said, I'm energy, right? Why am I gonna expend energy onto something that doesn't really matter to me or is not gonna further me in any way? Like a year from now, we might not even be working together. And if we're not working together, I'm not contacting you. So why am I going to stress myself out over
this? Right? You get it. You get it. You who knows? You get it.
Yeah.
You get it. That's how I feel about life. I'm not engaging with this. This is like not even worth the like, you know, I'm just going to walk away. But anyways, I say all that to say, thanks again for listening.
For sure.
And, I appreciate it. And I send you peace, love, and, you know, good luck and being, thank you for being a steward of, like, you know, pulling stories out of people. Because I, you know, I am the one who's always listening to stories, but I never share my story. Aww. But it's because it's you. Oh, real shit. Really, though. I'm the one who's always listening, but I never share. And I, and you know, wow, that, because it was you, I was like, I'm gonna do it.
that just made my day. That really just made my day. Oh, yeah. And I'm learning to tell my story too. Similar to you, I love stories. Right? Mm-hmm. I was an avid reader. But I didn't necessarily feel comfortable. Like, I, besides my close friends, a lot of people don't know my life story. Like, very few people know, like, you know.
Right.
And so,
right.
And there's, like, sometimes people make assumptions about who you are, and I'm just like, I'm going to let you think what you want. You know what I mean? But as I got older, I'm like, understanding that me telling my story can help somebody else feel more comfortable with their story, right? And that's what I want. You know, I want people to be comfortable, because I think when we can be comfortable with ourselves, we can be comfortable in the world. And that makes us better.
Yeah.
And better, you know, sibling, better, just a better person in general in whatever context we're in, right? And so that's what I want. Like, I want to interact with people who are better, like their best selves, right?
So But I think there's something to say about being a good listener too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we all have these stories and people don't always bring them out, you know, and sometimes when you're the one who's always listening, I used to get discouraged, like, man, I don't know, like, I wouldn't mind sharing my life story or just sharing certain parts of my life, but, like, I need to find a good listener, you know? And I would say this experience, like, you are a good listener.
Aww.
You know?
That warms my heart. That warms my heart. But, yeah. But thank you so much, Leah. I want to say Kalia. I want to feel special. I want to be part of the special club. But I'm going to go when you give me
it's
the
okay.
Permission.
Michael Clegg calls me Kalia. He refuses to call me anything else. So you can join the Michael Clegg club.
No, I'm going to let you give me the privilege of calling you Kalia. I'm going to let you text me and be like, hey, it's
Kalia. You are
and
officially
then I'm like,
knighted.
And now, and then I'll be like, I can call you Kalia. Until then, until you officially give me a notice, I will be calling you Leah. And our listeners will all call you Leah.
Yes. Yes.
Well, thanks again, Leah.
Yeah, thank you. I'm about to go head downtown DC and get some good food.
Yes, go for it. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll catch up with you later, love.
All right, later.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Hey y'all, thank you for tuning in. Please remember to subscribe, leave a review, and share the episode. Be sure to also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Turning Point Diaries. Kume, until next time.
Theme music by Exile Dynamics featuring More Box.